The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox go liftoff mode in Space City. They beat the Astros handedly tonight, 14-1, an offensive explosion all around throughout the entire lineup, and Dustin May delivers his best performance since being traded here after the deadline. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm here with Terry Cushman and Doug Atchison, and guys, after the disappointment of last night where there's a little bit of a rally, they come up short. They came out tonight firing on all cylinders. The offense, pretty much everyone, 1 through 9, had a hit. The only guy who didn't was pinch hitter Ali Sanchez, which kind of doesn't count, so we won't count it. And obviously, Dustin May delivers his best performance yet. So, Doug, I'll start with you. Dustin May, this is a guy that a lot of people poo-pooed the trade. I kind of did as well. I said last night that the Dodgers give up on a pitcher, you shouldn't go get him, but Red Sox did, and he kind of showed his best stuff tonight. What did you think of it?
No, absolutely. I mean, even with the 14 runs, the story of the game is still how Dustin May pitched, I think, even over the offense. I mean, what is it, 12 whiffs? He had 12 swing and misses. He had 8 Ks, no runs. And it wasn't just that. Like, he was, like, painting. Like, his pitches were looking really good. They had movement, and you could tell he was feeling it. He was walking off the mound. He was walking strikeouts off. Impressive, really impressive stuff.
Terry, how about you?
Yeah, you know, it's just, it's been a weird season, you know. I mean, you don't start off super great, then you trade Devers, and then you look like one of the best teams in the American League. And, you know, it's been hot and cold since the All-Star break. And then you go into the Padres series last Friday. You got Buehler pitching. The one game you're supposed to automatically lose, that ends up being the only game you win. I'm not saying that we should have won the Giolito start or the Bayo start, but they were winnable-looking matchups, and we lost those. And then you come into this series, you have Garrett Crochet pitching, automatic win, right?
Yeah.
Until it wasn't. And then tonight, you know, you guys covered it pretty well last night. I mean, Spencer Arrighetti, he'd only made 3 starts. 2 of them were duds, so... You know, this game was essentially a toss-up, no matter how much we felt about Dustin May. But you know, he was attacking the zone. There was tons of movement. He was sitting around 97, 98 miles an hour. And I think his velo had been down. I think I read right after the trade that his velocity was down 4 or 5 miles an hour. He seems to have found some of that. He's a rental. And we'll hit free agency this winter. So perhaps it's, you know, this is kind of an audition on whether the Red Sox want to sign him. So how many starts do we think he has left? Probably 6?
Somewhere around there, 5 or 6 at the most. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I think that Dustin May looked really good tonight. And it's one of those weird things where, like, he was getting a lot of whiffs. And that was great. And his stuff just looked better. The sweeper looked better. The fastball had more life to it. He had hitters off balance. And I was just looking it up, like, you know, his number of pitches in terms of, you know, that compared to strikes. 92 pitches, 65 strikes, which for a guy like Dustin May, that's important because he can kind of get into that mode where, you know, if you remember the early days of Brian Bayo, where every start was a slog, like, he only made it 5 innings because he threw so many balls and just wasn't locating. Dustin May was locating tonight. And there were still a couple of at-bats that went a little bit longer than they should have, but this is a tough Astros lineup. Even without Yordan Alvarez, it's a tough Astros lineup. You know, they added Sanchez at the deadline. They brought Correa back. So they beefed up their lineup a little bit, and he went out there and, you know, looked very confident against them. So, and I do think the extra rest that the Red Sox gave him after they acquired him may have helped, because I think LA was probably, you know, back and forth, either rotation, bullpen. I think they were just kind of using him back and forth because they're so stacked. I think if you let him just stay in the rotation, let him just pitch every 5 days, regular rest, you might get a better result. I think the Dodgers were kind of jerking him around because they can afford to. They have an embarrassment of riches at starting pitching and in their bullpen. So, and I don't think that they believed in him, obviously, because they basically gave him away at the deadline. So I think if the Red Sox can give him a stable role, you know, you're in the rotation, you're going to pitch every 5 days, that's going to give him confidence to say, okay, I can use the 4 days to rest, recover, really prepare, because I know I'm going to be starting again. I'm not going to be coming out of the bullpen out of an emergency because the Dodgers are going to do that, right? So I think that kind of stability will help him as well.
Yeah, totally, totally. And like I said the same thing about when Cooper had his start. It's like, if you just keep balls in the yard, you throw strikes, and you just trust your defense, even though our defense is shaky, but still, if you just can get attack them with strikes and attack hitters with strikes, you have to trust your defense to make the plays. And if you trust your stuff that you can keep it in the yard and it's not going to fly all over the place, that's how you have to attack batters. And he did that tonight. He just wasn't wasting pitches. He was attacking guys. He even had, felt like he had a lot of O2s. And just, he was going after them. That's what you got to see, especially from a guy not at the top of your rotation.
And a lot of the traffic on the bases happened with two outs. So it was, you know, he got the first two outs pretty quick each time and really, you know, wasn't under much pressure. The other thing, too, I thought was funny. I mean, I think Dustin May probably even surprised Alex Cora because Justin Wilson was up in the fifth inning. And I'm like, I wasn't paying as much attention as I should have, but there must have been a lefty coming up. And I'm thinking to myself, why are you taking him out? Like, Justin Wilson is fine, but who in this bullpen do you trust right now? You know, and I'm guessing Whitlock wouldn't have been available. Chapman most likely would have in a close game, but luckily Hicks wouldn't have been available. But man, you may as well just ride it out with, you know, with Dustin May. And then I think they finally broke it open. Narvaez hit an absolute piss missile into the Crawford boxes. 82 mile an hour off speed, not quite middle, but close enough, hung it. And it seemed like Narvaez was sitting on it and absolutely destroyed it. And the game was out of reach at that point. Another thing too, the Red Sox have done all their damage on the Astros bullpen. Javier only gave up 2 runs last night. And I think that was his first start of the season. He'd been hurt. Mm-hmm. And then Eric Geddy was probably fortunate to only give up 2 runs tonight. That's all it was. He walked 5, including the bases loaded in the inning, which he gave up 2 runs. But the Red Sox have done all their damage against the bullpen. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. And they're not going to have Josh Hader either. He's out with a shoulder issue. Yeah. So that, I don't know, they have an okay bullpen either way, but yeah, it was interesting. They haven't really hit the starting pitching too well, but destroyed the bullpen.
Yeah, that's something I'm a little surprised at. If I'm an Astros fan, I'm kind of annoyed that they didn't focus more on bullpen needs at the deadline. I mean, I think they went out and got Jesus Sanchez because they're not sure what's going to happen with Yordan Alvarez and when he's going to be back. His timeline got delayed. But outside of that kid Abreu and Josh Hader, their bullpen looks a little vulnerable. Like, it's not terrible, like you said. It's still pretty decent. But I think you saw it tonight. Like, their worst pitcher in their rotation actually pitched pretty well against a good Red Sox lineup, and then the bullpen came and it just went, you know, completely backwards. So interesting for Houston that they didn't focus more on bullpen, you know, and I feel like in years past when they were really focused on getting back to the World Series, they did that. You know, I mean, they always had an aggressive bullpen move at the deadline. This year, they just, for whatever reason, didn't. So, and good on the Red Sox taking advantage of it. I'm glad that they let May go as long as they felt comfortable with. You know, I think 95 pitches is pretty good for a guy that they're still kind of stretching out. And then you bring in Justin Wilson and this new kid, Giovanni Moran. He ran into a little bit of trouble there at the end, but when you've got a 14-run cushion, you know, let the kid sort it out, right? I mean, it's not the arsonist Jordan Hicks out there, so you're probably still safe. But in terms of the offense, that was the big story as well. Dustin May was probably, I think, the highlight, but this offense just crushing that Astros bullpen, and guys like Narvaez really delivering, Roman Anthony having another stellar game himself. Masataki Yoshida should have had a home run if it was basically any other ballpark on that sac fly. So the offense looked good, and we talked about this a little bit last night. Like, yes, they're a streaky offense, but these are nights where you look at this team and you go, they can beat anybody. And this is why we're saying, just get in. Hold on to that wild card spot and just get in, because if you have, you know, nights like this, games like this, you can make a run. So I thought the offense kind of putting up those big numbers was a big sign of, like, you know, that's the NLS division leader right there. That's, you know, going to be a team that might make it to the ALCS, and you just buried them with your offense. So as much as May was impressive, I thought the offensive output as well was equally impressive.
Yeah, no, that was, I mean, watching them rake tonight was sick. It really was. I mean, it was fun. You know, we hit three home runs. I mean, if Roman Anthony really, that's two games in a row now. If he really puts together his power, I mean, he's one of the best outfielders in the league already at 21 years old, it feels like. And I feel like when he's up, I trust him more than anyone except Bregman in the lineup. And he's doing all this at 21. I mean, sky's the limit for this kid, honestly. I think he's – and if he stays hot, if he finds his power right now going into the last 2 months of the season, I mean, it's really what we need. What we really need is more home runs, and that could really lift us.
The interesting thing about Anthony is I don't think he's ever hit lower than fourth in the lineup. He came in right into it, hitting third and fourth. And Alex Cora, you know, a couple weeks ago said he's my leadoff guy for the rest of the year. And Jaron Duran, I mean, he's been quiet the last couple games or so, but when Rafaela was on a tear and fizzled, it was really Duran that stepped up and was the spark plug. I mean, he was hitting in the last 30 games. I think he was hitting a little over 300 with an on base close to four. The power hasn't been there. And I thought this could be a year where we would see a power uptick for Duran. But I mean, he's kind of come on as of late, and taking him out of the leadoff spot and putting Anthony there hasn't really messed with Duran at all.
I love Roman in the leadoff spot. I think it's perfect. I mean, I feel like he starts every game with a walk. And he can steal bag like he showed tonight. I think it's a really good spot for him.
I agree. Yeah, it seems like Anthony's approach is kind of what we were told Tristan Costa's approach was. Like, he commands the strike zone. He's going to draw a lot of walks. And the reason I say what we were told is because I think Tristan Costa still swings for the fences way too much. Like, Roman Anthony is much more, he has much more discretion with the strike zone. Now, does he still chase every now and then? Of course. You know, he's 21 years old. He's going against, you know, really good MLB quality relievers. So that's going to happen. For the most part, like, I agree with you guys. I feel really good with him at the plate, and I do like him in that leadoff spot. I think it was too much for Duran. I think Duran needed a little bit of a break from being the leadoff guy every single game, both against righties and lefties, especially when he was slumping. Because, look, he's a late bloomer. He's obviously a very good player, but He is a guy that gets in his own head and he gets very hard on himself. So when he's slumping and he's still in that leadoff spot, the pressure's got to feel like a ton of bricks on his shoulders. So I like that Cora kind of made that decision of, look, Roman is, you know, he's poised. He's collected at the plate. He's going to take his walks. Let's put him in the leadoff and let's see what he does. And it's been a huge change for this lineup. So I hope he keeps him there. I think it's the best spot for Roman right now. And I'm glad the power is starting to show up, because when Roman first came up, there was a lot of those loud outs, right? Yeah, he lined out, but he hit it 103 miles an hour. And to his credit, Tristan Casas went through a similar thing before he got hurt. You know, when he was hitting 180 and everyone was getting frustrated, it's like, well, look at the exit velocity on the hits. Like, they are being hit hard. It's frustrating that they're outs, but he's clearly making the contact. So I just thought it was funny that, like, the power's starting to come, because that was a criticism of Boston local media saying, well, man, he took that extension pretty early. Like, is he worried that he's never going to hit for power? He only has two home runs. Now he's doubled that in, you know, two games. So I'm glad it's finally starting to come, because it's like, a guy who hits the ball that hard is going to hit for power. You just have to be, oh, I don't know, a little patient, which is hard for people in Boston. I get that. being from here, I totally get that. Yeah. But yeah, it's good to see him finally, you know, hitting the ball over the fence too.
His Savant chart, by the way, it's kind of shaded weird, because he, you know, he hasn't hit his qualifiers, but it looks a lot like Juan Soto's. So it's pretty up there. I mean, Soto's is, he does rank a little bit higher in a lot of categories, but Anthony has some of the highest exit velocity of anyone in the league. Hard hit, barrel, bat speed is among the highest. He does not chase. Elite command of the strike zone, as Jason was pointing out. Draws tons of walks. And, I mean, he's the number one prospect in all baseball, and he's living up to it. Who was the number one prospect in all baseball last season?
Jackson Holliday.
And how's he doing?
I mean, at least he's not as bad as he was when he first came up. So, yeah, he is figuring it out. But it took him a while. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see him coming up quite a bit. We got six games against the Orioles this month. One of them's a weird two-game set, but then we have them four games the following week. We've got a weak schedule. There's not many games above 500. How many teams above 500? I mean, you got the Yankees, but, I mean, are they going to be above 500 for till the end of the year? It's just not looking great for them. We've got the Athletics twice. We've got the Rays in there. I actually have it right here. Let's just go through the schedule. So we got the Marlins next, and that they're probably one of the more tougher teams, honestly.
Yeah, they're hot.
Yeah, a lot of young guys just kind of living up to it. Then we got two against the Orioles, four against the Yankees, four against the Orioles, three against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Then you have three against the Guardians, who are surging. And the way Detroit's been playing, I don't know that the Guardians won't end up winning the American League East. We'll see. And they're hot right now as well. So the Guardians are the only above 500 team except for the Yankees at the moment. Then you've got three against Arizona, three against Oakland, three against New York, three more against Oakland, three against Tampa. Then you have a potentially tough series against the Blue Jays, and then you wrap it up at the end of September against the Detroit Tigers at home. So, and they're not playing well. And I listened to a Tigers podcast today. It's called Days of Roar. We had one of their hosts on over the winter. A lot of gloom and doom with that team right now. So we'll see, especially the pitching.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I do think the Red Sox have a pretty light schedule in the second half. And I remember going into the deadline, we were talking about it. They had, I think, the fourth strongest schedule remaining, but that was before all the trades were made. So that was before, like, Arizona blew it up and they got rid of Eugenio Suarez and they, you know, got rid of a bunch of other guys. That was before, I think, Oakland got rid of Bobby Miller. So, you know, a lot of teams that were left on your schedule kind of traded pieces away. Even Tampa gave some guys away. They didn't get rid of Yandy Diaz, but they traded away, you know, a guy like Taj Bradley, who you may have had to face, you know, in a start, and now you don't have to. So their schedule got a little bit lighter because of the trade deadline and because of the Yankees just going in a tailspin at the moment. And with this Marlins series coming up, you are lucking out because your pitching matchups are basically, it's none of their really good guys. It's Alcantara, Quantrill, and Jansen Junk. So, it, you know, you're facing kind of the bottom half of their rotation. You're not facing Cabrera. You're not facing Yuri Perez. So, and, you know, Miami can score, but their whole thing is pitching. So the fact that you're facing the bottom half of the rotation, that kind of gives you an advantage in that series as well. So the Red Sox should take advantage of this because your second half schedule at first looked bad before the deadline, but a lot of those teams blew things up and kind of did you a favor by making themselves weaker. I think the Guardians series will be tough. Even though they sold, they're somehow now going on a massive winning streak. So they'll be tough. Toronto will obviously be tough. Tampa Bay, even though they didn't really buy, they're always going to play you hard. So there's a couple of tough ones mixed in there, but this is all the makings. Like, it's the Red Sox wild card to lose at this point. I know we all want the division, but if Toronto just keeps, you know, playing good baseball and just staying hot, it's going to be hard to catch them. That first wildcard spot is yours for the taking. The rest of the American League is such trash outside of the top division leaders. So it's really theirs to lose. And games like tonight make you think, yeah, you can go into a lot of those series and outscore and outpitch a lot of these teams, hang on to that first wildcard spot, get home field advantage, which would be huge for them.
100%. I mean, I think the division's still in play with a big game with Toronto at the end of the season. I mean, if we just keep winning 2 out of 3, we keep winning series, and you stay in the hunt, and then when you get to that series, anything, you know, we could steal the division. But 100%, the wild card is ours to lose, 100%. And I don't think we're gonna lose it. I think we're gonna. I honestly feel like we're gonna start playing really good baseball right now, and hopefully, this is when you want to hit your stride, and hopefully, this is when you want to. Because I don't think the lineup we've been seeing is gonna be the playoff lineup, and hopefully, I would like to start seeing the playoff lineup and seeing it get to play a little bit more before they just jump into it. Because I can't really take Toro at first much longer.
I think you're gonna. I mean, I think Chris did a good job pointing out last night. They're gonna keep Campbell. Yes, they're gonna keep him, I think, down in Worcester.
Yeah, I would like to see him up, but I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, it preserves the trade value, and not that he will, or I even want him to be traded, but at least it preserves that. And I think Alex Cora and Craig Breslow, they love their platoons. They like to mix and match. It's their favorite thing. It makes them feel smart. And I mean, you mentioned the defense. I mean, Toro really is the only bad defender in the infield. Yeah. I mean, Bregman, Story, and Rafaela are pretty good. And he had Toro boot one earlier. And, you know, and he'll sneak in a low leverage home run when we're either way behind or way ahead. And I hit one last night, and I mean, it seemed meaningless at the time, but we did come back to within one. But I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, what is the postseason lineup? I think it's exactly what we have. I mean, you're still going to get Duran and Anthony out there just about every day, and Abreu against righties a lot. I think this is it.
You think Mass is the DH in the playoffs?
Well, I mean, it has to be an internal guy. So, I mean, who's it going to be internally?
I mean, I would like to see it just be Duran. And play Raphael in center field. Play Willier, play Romy.
Who plays second?
Romy.
Oh, Romy. All right.
I mean, I feel like that's... probably our best lineup. Unless you take Toro out of first. And then we can... Maybe it's something different.
I just put Romy at DH then, honestly.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue is that Marcelo Meyer, I think, is done for the year. I don't think they want to officially announce it yet, but it feels like they've been very hush-hush about that injury, but his wrist is in a full brace. I mean, it feels like if he even starts swinging again, it won't be until late September. And by that point, he might be too rusty. And if they're in a playoff series, they won't want to add him to the playoff roster if he's not ready to go. So I kind of agree with Terry. I think this is the lineup you're going to see. I think it's going to be more Raphael at second, Duran out in center, and Yoshida being your DH. Because I think Yoshida is starting to slowly show you something, at least, you know, with the bat. Like, again, he had that big hit tonight where in Fenway, that would have been a home run. You know, he hit it out to the track in Houston. He just happened to hit it to the, you know, deepest part of the ballpark there. Yeah, he's still going to have his rollovers to second, which is frustrating. But I think they are pretty much set that, like, this is what we got going forward. I mean, you're stuck with Abraham Toro. You have no other option at first base. They didn't go out and trade for someone, which they should have, but they didn't. And you have no options in AAA. You traded away Blaze Jordan. You have nobody. So, and Tristan Casas is not coming back this year. So you're stuck with Abraham Toro. And yeah, he's a frustrating player. He'll make a really bad play and he'll be bad at the plate. And then he'll make a really good one, like the double play tonight, where he snared that ball, tagged the bag, and made a good throw to second base. Now, credit to Trevor Story for keeping the tag on so that they could get the out. But, you know, it was a nice play. And, you know, look, that's who Toro is. He's a 4A player. 4A players will frustrate you at times, and then they'll have those games where you go, wow, thank God this guy's on the roster with all the injuries we have. So I think you're kind of stuck with him. I think this is your playoff roster. It's going to be the Toro Romy platoon at first base. It's going to be a lot of Raphael at second, Duran in center, you know, Anthony in left, and Yoshida as your DH. And is that perfect? Obviously not. If Marcelo Meyer was healthy, it would be different. If Tristan Casas was healthy, it'd be different. But I think this is what you're kind of stuck with. It's not the worst, but it does kind of make you go, yeah, like they're going to make the playoffs. They should be a wildcard team, but how far can they really go if that's their lineup going up against the real iron of the American League when it comes to, you know, whoever that's going to be, right? Toronto at some point, Cleveland, if they stay super hot, like, how do you feel about that? We don't know yet.
I think 70 years from now, when Meyer is probably no longer alive, he'll be almost 100, will be long gone. His headstone's going to say done for the season. And that's what it's going to be. And just imagine, I mean, he's looking at Roman Anthony's paycheck, $130 million. I don't know. It's probably structured weird. And, you know, Christian Campbell's getting paid. And Meyer's going to be making what? 750 whatever next year? 750,000? Like, this guy's got to get tougher. I mean, if you can't stay healthy at age 20, 21, and 22, I mean, what's his career going to be? Yeah.
Totally. I mean, he was hurt the same, and it's the same injury too. Right. So you're seeing a recurring injury already at this age. It's not, I mean, it's not ideal. It's not what you want to see out of a young star, a young potential star.
Yeah.
He should. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No, because I see people in the chat saying, like, you know, just being so sick of Abraham Toro, just call up whoever it is in the minors. Do we have any sort of lefty power first baseman or anyone good defensively? Yes. Honestly, guys,
Well, you got Grissom. I don't know about the defense.
You're looking at Vaughn Grissom, and that's not a good option. At least not defensively. He has been better with the bat down in Worcester, so maybe. But no, guy, I'm telling you, their first base depth is shot. They just don't. They don't have it, and they don't have it at third base either. They've got a bunch of young kids there, sure, but no one that you could call up right now and say they'll be better than Abraham Toro. As crazy as that sounds, that's how weak they are at the corner infield position. They have a ton of shortstops. They have a ton of outfielders. They have nothing at the corners going forward. So, again, I think you're stuck with Toro. Maybe Vaughn Grissom, if they feel really brave, maybe he's a September call-up and they try him out. But I don't feel good about that defensively. Maybe offensively he gives you something, but defensively, I don't think so.
I get what you guys point on Campbell, that they don't want to ruin his trade value. I get that from a management standpoint, but from a fan, I hate that. Right? Because I feel like I would like his bat in the lineup. I think he could really help us. I think his bat could really help us in the lineup. And, you know, to hear they don't want to ruin his value, you know, from a fan perspective, that sucks.
I don't really get into the driveline stuff that much, but apparently he was the poster child for it within the Red Sox organization. Tristan Casas, big driveline guy. Look what happened. Lots of struggling. So what I'm hoping is maybe they've used the last month and a half to kind of get away from that, refocus on a more traditional approach, and see what happens. I mean, the talent's there, and he has a really good eye. I mean, even when he wasn't making contact, he was drawing walks. So it's not like he's lost at the plate, but I would bring him up, just for the record. I would do it. I just don't have the confidence that they will. Right, and then at the end of the day, I really think the pitching is what's going to make or break us. I mean, you need a good start from Buehler tomorrow. He's up against Hunter Brown. So
that's tough.
Even if he does have a good one, it's hard to, but you'll have all your arms. Whitlock will be available. Chapman has been available. I'd love to see Bernardino back up. I mean, the dude had, I don't know, 8 or 9 scoreless outings in a row when he was sent down. So
he's doing it down there too.
Is he? Okay. Yeah. They might have to wait 15 days. So that's probably part of it. But unless an injury happens, then they can call him up. But I'm skeptical with the pitching. And Crochet, I mean, I'm not pessimistic, but I mean, this is a huge load for him. He's literally never pitched this much. So, you know, we're kind of in uncharted waters there. I think Bayo will continue to be solid. I still think Giolito will be solid. I don't know if he'll be, you know, Cy Young 2.0 behind Crochet like he seemed to be for 6 or 7 weeks, but it's the back end of the rotation and it's certain guys in the bullpen. That's what's going to make or break us. If they all figure it out, or most of them figure it out, then things will get interesting.
Yeah, hopefully I would like to see them bring up Cooper. I'd like to see them bring up Campbell. I just, you know, but who knows? I don't know, but if May, I feel like May and Buehler now are kind of fighting for that last playoff rotation spot. The rest of it's kind of like a tryout the rest of the season now to see who's going to be the fourth guy in the rotation.
Well, someone pointed out Buehler basically at this point forward gets $500,000 for every 2 starts he makes. So that's, I don't know, what's that? I'm bad at math. I guess that's only $1.5 million for the remainder of the season, roughly, if he makes 6 starts. But I don't know. Maybe.
Do you have to stop Buehler in the playoffs just because of his track record?
I think you just have to ride the hot hand. I mean, if he closes it out pretty good, then yeah. But also, you only need four starters.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think that's why if Dustin May can emerge here, that's what makes that number four spot so important, because in the playoffs, you can roll Crochet, Bayo, Giolito, and you can feel pretty good about that. At most, you might need a fourth guy. That's what those two should be competing for. That's what Walker Buehler should be competing for, because he bet on himself with the one-year deal. So if he loses that number four spot, he doesn't pitch in the playoffs at all, and this is what other teams see from him in terms of what he did in the regular season, he's not going to get anything. I mean, he'll get like a, you know, if anything, a spring training invite from teams, you know, a minor league deal or, you know, a very small money major league deal. But he can earn himself a lot of money if he pitches really well his last couple of starts and he gets a postseason start and once again pitches well in October. So that should be his motivation. That should start tomorrow. It should have started, you know, ages ago, but whatever. If Dustin May kind of lights a fire under his ass with the way he pitched tonight, hopefully Walker Buehler goes out there tomorrow and, you know, delivers and says, no, I want to be pitching in October. I don't want to be, you know, just in the bullpen in October. So that's what those two should be competing for.
I don't know if Cooper Criswell even hits 90 miles an hour on the gun. Buehler is low 90s, doesn't really have much of a fastball. And then Fitz, I don't know. He seemed to be, 95, 96, something like that. And then you got Dustin May. That's probably about 97, 98. I mean, he has the best stuff of everyone. So I just think if tonight is more of a truer indication of what he is, I think he has to be the fourth guy. And if you go back to 2013 and 2018, I'm pretty sure we used a five-man rotation in that postseason, in both postseasons. So I think we would use at least four here. And I think with the wild card round, though, there's only one off day, basically. You play three straight in whichever stadium has home field advantage. And if you're the fourth or – no, excuse me. So it'd be the fifth or sixth seed, which would be the second and third wild card. You're not going to – you won't play a home game in the wild card game, essentially.
Yeah, and that's why I think them hanging on to that first wild card spot is so important, because this team is night and day between how they play at home versus how they play on the road. So so they got to keep winning games. And, you know, tonight was a good one, but you got a chance to take the series tomorrow. Let's go ahead and take a look at that matchup before we send the people home. So you got Walker Buehler, who we've been talking about. Big start for him, but he's going up against Hunter Brown, who is arguably Houston's best pitcher, and going to be a tough matchup. So I don't feel great about it. Again, I think Walker Buehler is starting to feel a little bit cooked to me. I feel like the velocity's down. He's not pitching the way that we thought that he would. And I think Hunter Brown has a chance to really shut down this lineup. So I'm not feeling all that optimistic. I think that it's another game where Buehler is going to put you behind, and this Red Sox lineup won't be able to catch up against a guy like Hunter Brown.
Yeah, I mean, you have to – it's a no-brainer. You have to favor the Astros. Now, having said that, I outlined the previous four games at the start of the show. I mean, the opposite has happened. I mean, Buehler wasn't supposed to beat the Padres, but it happened. And apparently he owns them historically. So perhaps
we beat up on Brown last time, right?
Did we? Or maybe we did.
When we swept, I feel like when we swept him, we beat him up. I can't remember what we got off him, but he was one of the wins we had against them, right? In the sweep.
Well, we swept. Yeah, we did. We did pitch. I want to say he was pretty solid. I'm pulling it up right now.
Yeah.
But. There was one game we kind of blew that late. Yeah, he went seven innings of just one run ball.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not quite sure. And that was
that game,
Yeah, that was a 2-1 win. So
yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard to get two wins off him, right? This close. So he's that good that you gotta really, Buehler has to really go out there with the mindset that he has to pitch a gem to get to walk away with a series win for the team. He has to really, you know, hopefully he feels that pressure.
The good news is the Red Sox will have the tiebreaker should that matter. If you're going for that first wild card spot, you have the same number of wins. The Mariners would obviously have to win the division for that to happen, but it's one advantage we have.
It'll still happen. Yeah. Seattle's been red hot ever since the deadline. So I wouldn't rule that out. And yeah, like you guys said, I mean, Hunter Brown pitched well in that game, but we got it late, you know, and it was extra innings. We got to their bullpen again. So maybe that's the formula. Like you said, you know, if Buehler can just keep us in it and just not, you know, puke on his cleats and, you know, maybe give a quality start, you know, six innings, only three runs or less. Maybe that's the formula. Get it to their bullpen, you know, beat them late. So I think that's what you got to hope for. But yeah, hopefully they can take a game tomorrow, you know, go into that Miami series with a little bit of momentum. But we'll see. Walker Buehler is a bit of a toss-up, so we'll be on the edge of our seats for sure. But with that, we will wrap up this episode. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow night after that Walker Buehler start, breaking down everything that happened. Hopefully it's a good result, but we'll see. So everyone have a good rest of your Tuesday night. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care.